As you know, we are now in the season of Epiphany, the time in the church year when we hear the stories of Jesus' life, Jesus' ministry. And Jesus, maybe knowing that his time on this earth would be relatively short and brief, made it crystal clear right out of the starting gate what his ministry was going to be about, and for whom he had a special care and concern. From the beginning, Jesus went against societal norms, and he gave his voice, and he showed compassion and love for the voiceless and the powerless of his time, the marginalized, the outcast, the persecuted, women, sick, the disabled, mentally ill, the stranger, the widow, the orphan, the foreigner. Over the centuries since Jesus' time, we would like to think that society has progressed, which of course it has, but the reality today is that these same groups often remain without voice, without power, marginalized, forgotten, and sometimes even disparaged in our nation and around the world. But the bias of God and the bias of the church remains the same. The church is called to imagine. The words of two Nobel Peace Prize winners, both from a church community, have in our time given voice to the gospel that Jesus himself began. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King said it powerfully. The church must be reminded that it is not the master or the servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state. It must be the guide and critic of the state, and never its tool. If the church does not recapture its prophetic zeal, it will become an irrelevant social club without moral or spiritual authority. And Archbishop Desmond Tutu of South Africa summarized Jesus' gospel of radical compassion in pretty straightforward terms when he said, "God is not even-handed. God is biased horribly in favor of the weak. The minute an injustice is perpetrated, God is going to be on the side of the one who is being clobbered." And it is indeed true that throughout the Old and New Testaments, we hear the message that each of us is created in God's image. Therefore, no one should live in fear of how they will be treated, but rather every person, every child of God should be loved, respected, and valued. In the first lesson that Karen will read from the letter of Peter, we learn that we are chosen to bring into this world God's marvelous light of love into the world's darkness. And then in our second lesson, we come face to face with the fact that it was the outcast leper who was faithful to Jesus, and to whom Jesus turned to affirm, heal, embrace, and yes, to love. So Jesus said to that leper, "You are somebody. I love you."
The first reading this morning is taken from second chapter of 1 Peter, verses 1 to 3 and 9 to 12. "Rid yourselves, therefore, of all malice and all guile, insincerity, envy, and all slander. Like newborn infants, long for the pure spiritual milk, so that by it you may grow into salvation, if indeed you have tasted that the Lord is good. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's own people, in order that you may proclaim the mighty acts of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. The second reading is from the 17th chapter of Luke, verses 11 to 19. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through the region between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 lepers approached him. Keeping their distance, they called out, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well." May God bless our understanding of this reading.
Thanks be to God.
I remember the day clearly. In some ways, it was just a kind of ordinary day. I was leaving work, but I was feeling a bit out of sorts, and like I hadn't really done my job very well that day. So, you know, on your ride home, or, you know, you're thinking about the day and kind of processing it, and that's what was happening to me. And I got off the one exit that I go on, Route 91 South, and I was merging onto Route 99 South in Rocky Hill. And in front of me, there was a car with the words, "You are loved," scrawled on the back windshield. Just the words I needed to hear. You are loved.
And those are words that I think we all, on any given day, need to hear, that we are loved. And those were the words that Howard Thurman learned as a young boy, and words that he then had to share with his own children. Howard Thurman, as you may know, was an African-American theologian, noted for his writing, but well as his great actions. And he learned about his own self-worth, that he was created in the image of God, that he was loved, from his grandmother. His grandmother was a slave, but it was in worship that she learned that she was valued, created in God's image, that she had worth and dignity. Well, years later, in the 1950s, when Howard Thurman had two young girls, they made a road trip from the north. They were in the north. They went down south, spotted a park for a rest stop one day on their travels. So they pulled off into the park, and his young girls spotted a playground. They were very excited. They had been in the car a long time. So they ran over to the playground, beckoning their dad to follow along. Now, they were too little, so they couldn't, too young, they couldn't read. And so they did not see the sign that was on the fence that Howard Thurman saw: "By state law, whites only." Well, these young girls, being from the North, had not experienced racism as yet. And so Howard had to take his two daughters, bring them close, sort of the way his grandmother did, embrace them, and explain to them, "You know, girls, you are so powerful, you are so important and valued in God's eyes, that it took the governor, the lieutenant governor, and the entire state police force to keep you out of this playground. Girls, you are somebody.
You are somebody. That's what Scripture tells us. If you go to the first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis, over and over again, we are told we are created in God's image. Wow. Each of us created in God's image. And then Jesus lives this out. Jesus nurtures and welcomes and includes. And he includes and welcomes and nurtures those who are on the margins, women and children, the sick, the lonely, the ones that society had cast out. Jesus values them and calls them by name. A group of medical students were in their first semester of school, and they were taking a quiz in one of their classes. And they were a little anxious about it, and they all kind of were getting towards the end of the quiz. And the last question was, name the person who cleans our school. They could picture her. She was tall and had dark hair and was probably in her 50s or 60s, but they didn't know her name. And so as the students finished the quiz and then were leaving the classroom, one of them was brave enough to ask the professor, "Is that question going to count?" And the professor said, "Yes. In your profession, you will meet many people. All are significant. And you can change the world by noticing them, by smiling, and by calling them by name." Those students never forgot that lesson, and they also learned that her name was Dorothy.
And that is a lesson that we all need to relearn and over again, because it is so easy to forget people, neglect people, walk by people on the street. We all do it. But every person is a beloved child of God, worthy of being called by name and worthy of our love and respect. One person who did not walk by an individual one day was John Hill. In a story told by his daughter, Judy, it's a story that has stayed with her and changed her life. Judy, young girl, maybe early teens, with a girlfriend, went with their dad, with John, on some errands. They went to Caldor's. You remember Caldor's? So they were about to enter into the discount store when at the entrance of the store, on the sidewalk, was a woman obviously in distress, probably a homeless woman. She was sort of slumped down, leaning against the wall, and it would be so easy just to walk by her. And maybe the teenage girls wanted to just walk by her, but that wasn't John Hill. John Hill stooped down to her, said hello to her, and saw that she needed help. So John then said to Judy and her friend, "Could you stay with her while I go inside to the manager and get help?" And as it turns out, get an ambulance. And then John stayed until that ambulance arrived. John Hill was not someone to walk by and neglect and not notice someone. As in Jesus' time, as in John's time, as in our time, it is so easy to not notice, not stop, and not see the people around us. As in Jesus' time, as in our time, there are now people who are scared because they are on the margins of our society.
We've all felt, right, lost, alone, on the margins. And don't we all just long to be touched, to be comforted, to be reassured, to know that we are loved?
A community of caring begins with recognizing that every child is created in God's image.
The church has a role. We are called to use our prophetic voice to make a difference in the world. And if we do that, if we use our voice, then people will be noticed, they will be named, and they will be embraced.
Throughout the centuries, the call of the church has remained the same. We are called to notice, to name, and embrace. Jesus reminds us that we are all somebody, that we are all loved by our good and gracious God.
Diane, Jesus says, "You are somebody."
George, Jesus says, "You are somebody."
Ruth, Jesus says you are somebody.
Pat, Jesus says you are somebody.
Dawn, Jesus says you are somebody.
Sue, Jesus says you are somebody.